Hello.
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 Is it working?
I believe it's working.
All right.
I think I can see the things. I've turned up my headphones though. There, I feel better now.
Okay.
Two. Whoa. I'm gonna turn them down now. Two. That's what I like to talk like. Loud. Welcome to the Weird People Show. This is Whiskey Joe.
Hi, and I'm Zinjay.
Zinjay! Up on television.
I'm writing you Lost in the Woods. You're going to end up in the fire pit.
I'm lighting the fire right now.
Oh, wow. That was fast.
We are at the campfire, kids.
Yes, we are. It's very warm. Please help.
I got burned by a marshmallow.
No. Well, you still got to eat it anyway. No wasting food.
Okay. Amazing summer camp story real quick.
Okay.
Hold on. I have things I want to talk to you about too, but so all names not disclosed. A certain summer camp in Maine recently, there was a trip, okay?
Uh-huh.
And there's this counselor in charge of the trip.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Is it you?
It's not me.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think I would have done this. I understand why this was done.
But okay.
I mean, I sort of understand from the perspective of somebody who is afraid. So, there's this kid. Let's call him Billy Blunder. Okay? So, and he's in charge of this trip. And it's a tubing trip. And it's like, you know, probably like, I don't know, 14-year-old kids or 15-year-old kids or something.
Right.
It's a tubing trip. And they're at the campfire, right?
Uh-huh.
And these details get a little fuzzy here. Somehow, one of the children, young men, boys, burns their cheek with a hot marshmallow.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow.
As you do.
I'm not quite sure how that happened. Maybe it got flicked. I don't know if they were having a burning marshmallow fight or what. That part is unclear. But somehow, this young man got a burn on his cheek, right? It was mm-hmm. like, looked gnarly. I think I saw him the other day. I haven't seen it anymore. So it went away after like a week and a half or something.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently he got a burn on his cheek and it like looked kind of bad. It was like, uh-oh. So if you're Billy Blunder, what's the first thing you do? What's your next move?
Billy Blunder is the counselor?
Yeah, the counselor.
Okay. Well, I was, for 5-year-olds granted, but I was a summer camp counselor for a couple of summers,
okay.
So I'm trying to, like, go back into the recesses of my traumatized brain.
You're on a trip, you know, with the children, one of them.
I mean, the first thing, hypothetically, is, you know, every counselor gets a little, first aid kit, you know, you get that kid an ice pack or something.
Okay, good move, yep. And but if, yeah, and then maybe you think, oh, well, we might need some further treatment. What are you going to do next?
I mean, usually I would tell my director, because the director would then, you know, deliberate on whether or not you need to call the hospital.
Yeah, that is the exact right answer.
I'm so glad.
What you don't do is give the child your cell phone and let them call their mom. Before calling camp or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that could lead to a little bit of bureaucracy issues.
Yeah.
Because if the parent knows about the issue before the other counselors do, then the parent might show up and expect the counselors to be filled in on the situation and know what's going on, and the director is just like, what are you talking about?
That is exactly what happened, except she called the camp. And the camp director's like, what? So, yeah, not the best first move to do. I thought that was very funny.
No, it's interesting because, you know, they teach you during training and stuff that, like, if anything big happens, the first move is to always tell your director.
Yes.
But I'm also just the kind of person where whenever I didn't want to deal with something, I would make the director do it. So, like, that was always my go-to move, which, you know, everyone would be like, oh my god, you're following the rule book. And I'm like, I'm also just kind of lazy.
Well, it's just the best thing to do. And, yeah. You know, not that we want to, you know, separate the parents from their children, but more or less, yes.
Yeah, you tell the parents eventually.
Yeah. No, and they're fine, you know. They're fine. He was fine. So that was funny. But, another thing I wanted to talk to you about before we start telling our riddles and stories and songs and jokes at the campfire was a conversation I was having with a friend yesterday. And this conversation has to do with certain science fiction books and stories and
fun.
Things. So to set up the question I have for you,
mm-hmm.
there's three science fiction works that mm-hmm. this has to do with, and you don't really have to know what they are. I really love them all, though, and you should read them if you haven't. So the first one is the very popular, I'm not sure if this was a book first, but it's a very popular Apple series that I like to watch, which is For All Mankind, it's called.
Mm. Yeah, I haven't heard of that one, so.
So it's a, completely, everything is physically real in it. Like, it's exactly like the space program is, you know, it's about the space program.
Okay.
But there's a, it makes a posit on the very first episode that the Soviets won the Cold War. They won the space race, basically. So
didn't they technically win the space race?
Well, right, but even more so. It was a major failure. I think they failed to even land on the moon or something.
Yeah.
And the Russians beat them to the moon.
Okay.
And it was like a disaster.
Yeah.
Right. So that's basically happened to the first episode. Mm-hmm. And so this show is about the results of that. And so what if the space program...
Is everyone a communist now?
Well, no. They're still all the anti-communist fervor.
Yeah.
But the result that they theorize is that the space program gets flooded with money, you know, mm-hmm. and it accelerates way more rapidly than it has.
Okay.
You know, because the space program today is basically like, yeah, we can do all these things, but we don't really... Nobody's giving us any money to do it.
Okay.
So by... You know, 2004, there's the first Mars colony. You know,
it
goes faster. And it's really, you know, and that whole thing is really fun. And, of course, it's all about the melodrama of all the characters. And
yeah.
Stuff. So there's one thing. There is another thing. And these things, we were first talking about how great it is that these could all be actually sequels of each other, even though they're not. So then there's another thing, these three books that were written previously.
Mm-hmm.
That's called the Mars Trilogy. It's by this guy, Kim Stanley Robinson. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. Highly recommended. It's incredible. So it's a series of three books. And this is hard, rock hard sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
Again, very, you know, every piece of physics, it's all about these scientists. And everything is researched to the nth degree. And it's about the colonization of Mars. Starts out with just like the few tents. And then... you know, it goes into the political revolutions that then eventually happen when Mars is trying to become an independent colony and stuff like that. Interesting. So that, it's amazing. It's really cool. I'm on the last one now. So now there's a third thing called The Expanse, which you may have heard of.
I've heard of it. I don't know what it's about.
Well, that's okay. So so The Expanse is basically the logical next step of this, where the belts have the asteroid belt has is being mined. Mars is as well established, basically a country at this point. And Earth is you know, sort of starting to take a back seat to this, and there's the and what happens in it, no, this is not a spoiler, is that an alien life form is basically discovered, and it's got these like superpowers. Okay, so it's got basically, you know, it's almost magic. It's magic as far as anyone's concerned. So my question to you, after that long setup, is what is hard sci-fi? Right? Hard sci-fi is not fantasy.
I don't know. I mean, I know sci-fi well enough that, like, a lot of the stuff I write can sometimes be sci-fi. I think, honestly, I don't know a ton about, like, what the actual distinction is supposed to be. For me, it has always been pretty much just, like, the setting. Because, and the setting and, like, whether or not the author tries to explain anything using science. Because I think, for me, high fantasy, like, usually takes place in, you know, a very magical world where the author is explicitly like, yeah, this is magic. And at most you get like an artificer who is a magical chemist or something.
Right.
Whereas sci-fi, it's like they try to explain everything through science, even if they're doing things that seem like it could be magic. It's like, oh no, it's actually dilithium crystals or whatever.
That's an interesting one too. Because Star Trek is not particularly hard, you know. Yeah. Like it's, yeah. Like they start to explain things, and then they just go into saying nonsense. They say, "Oh, yeah, it's a trilithonide boovalo." Yeah, it's fine, you know. Which is another level of it. It's another level of like firmness.
I also feel like a lot of sci-fi was written with the explicit purpose of making commentary on current society, whereas like fantasy, there's a lot of stories that do that, but it's, in my experience, if a fantasy story is trying to teach you a lesson, it's a lot more general, where it's just like the lesson is friendship or whatever. Whereas sci-fi, they'll be like, capitalism will be the ruin of us all, and it's like, whoa.
Right. Right, that's interesting. There's more of a specific message, usually, in hard sci-fi.
Yeah, or at the very least, it's one that's more based in like what's currently happening. Because fantasy, like I said, it's a lot of times stuff that the author considers to be a universal truth, no matter where you are. And sci-fi is a lot of commentary about whatever is currently going on.
That's interesting. Well, you've given me a lot to think about. Because our conversation went in a different direction, but I think that's a really interesting point, is that sci-fi directly comments on the present more directly. But yeah, like, so aliens are okay because they could exist via... Because science doesn't preclude their existence.
Yes.
In other words, to be hard.
So you're saying that, like, you think... Is there anyone who's arguing that aliens aren't part of hard sci-fi?
I don't know. I don't really know the answer to who, to what people would argue this.
Okay.
But let's say, right. I would say aliens are pretty well firmly placed into hard sci-fi.
Yeah.
But there's no evidence that they exist, and the only reason that they're there is that we don't know that they're not there.
Yeah.
So therefore, why couldn't you just put God in there, or why can't you?
Some
all of a sudden
do.
We visit some gnomes.
I mean, in a sense, some people do. I don't know if I've ever heard of fantasy creatures like gnomes or anything showing up in a sci-fi story, but I haven't read it, but I've seen a lot of like summaries of it, so I know the general plot. But have you ever, like, Stranger in a Strange Land?
Yes, Heinlein book.
Yes. Well, at the end of the book, it's literally like revealed that the main character, who was this crazy, superpowered, magical Martian, literally was the Archangel Michael. So religion very much does play a part in some of these stories.
Well, and I mean, that softens it for sure, right?
Yeah.
My argument is that if you are starting to base something off of previously told stories like angels and gnomes, then that's injecting a fantasy flavor into it.
I mean,
whereas
I guess,
if you're only referencing scientific, like if you're making a jump in logic from some scientific experiment.
Yeah, but I mean, to a lot of people, religion and science go hand in hand, because religion at its core is trying to explain the things we can't understand, and science is one way to do that. But for a lot of people, religion fills in the gaps that science currently can't. So if you're writing a story and you're religious, it might reflect that, because you might come up with, you know, some scientific answers for, like, how does faster than light travel work, and then, you know, it's not contradictory to be like, and the fact that we even have any of this in the first place is because God made it.
Right. But would that be, and that's to me is in terms of telling a story or telling something that might be like, I can make that logical jump and continue with the story, and that's great. But my question is, what would the Comic-Con people say about that?
Like,
is that hard?
I mean,
and why, and if it isn't, why are aliens?
I think that's something that varies from person to person, because I can absolutely imagine some, like, you know, atheist sci-fi fans being like, oh, why'd you put God in my story or whatever?
Right.
But, you know, there's also, I imagine, some religious people who are like, oh, wow, you know, I appreciate this recognition of my belief.
Right.
I think it depends on the person, but, like, you know, ultimately, there are plenty of stories that are sci-fi and still have either completely made up or completely real deities in them, and they're still considered sci-fi.
Right. Like
Doctor Who even has Bad Wolf, and I don't know exactly what Bad Wolf is, because I've only seen like two seasons of the show, but it's basically God.
Right. And yeah, I don't think that Doctor Who would call itself particularly hard sci-fi. It just makes whatever leaps it wants to, and you can just accept it, you know. Mm-hmm. like yeah, I bet there is a gnome episode, you know. Like, there is that.
Yeah.
I think they base things off of stories.
I mean, there's episodes where they go back into like the 1800s and fight ghosts and stuff.
Right. Yeah, it's a good blend.
Yeah,
and yeah, I'm making no, you know, story quality judgments on any of this. I think it all makes sense to incorporate things that you've heard from stories, or incorporate things you hear from science. But I'm also fascinated by the idea of hard sci-fi, and I want someone to be like, they're not sci-fi, man.
Yeah,
I
mean,
don't know anybody who does that.
Yeah, I think the problem with making a sci-fi story that only uses elements that you can explain in the modern day with exclusively science is you are extremely limiting yourself to what your characters can actually do. Like, if we could realistically explain, you know, space travel in the modern day with stuff that we currently know, then why wouldn't we be doing that?
Right.
You got to fill in the gaps somehow. And, you know, if some people just make up science, some people throw in religion to fill in the gaps, some people,
right,
I guess, put gnomes in their stories.
There, What is with all these gnomes everywhere?
Yeah.
Why is everyone putting gnomes in their store? Okay, that's enough. Thank you very much for helping me understand that. We're at the campfire.
We are.
Does anyone have any jokes? Here, I've got a riddle for you.
Okay.
To open up things.
Okay.
Now, wait a minute. I have to, like, look in the back. Okay, so why is there nothing so modest as a watch? This is, like, probably going to be half-dumb joke.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds like it's just a pun.
Why is there nothing so modest?
As a watch?
As a watch.
Because it watches itself.
So modest as a watch.
It, like, watches its behavior.
Let's see.
It watches itself all the time.
397. There's also a lot of turns of phrases in here that are very mid-century.
Yeah, I know.
Because it is always running down its own works.
What?
No idea. Let's try this one.
Chat, if you can understand what that means. No.
Why do they... Oh, here's a dumb joke. That's also a riddle. Why do they put fences around graveyards? You know this one.
I'm sure I do. I'm forgetting it. Because people are dying to get in.
Yeah!
Okay, there we go.
Okay, here's a real riddle. A little white fence that's always wet but never rained on yet. What is it?
It was just painted?
No.
Hmm.
More... A little white fence that's always wet but never rained on yet.
And then the question is, what is it?
Here's another one that's the same answer. 30 white horses on a red hill. They chomp and they stomp and then they stand still. It's got the same answer to this. That one's from Lord of the Rings.
Tell me you would get killed by what's his name.
Yes, Gollum tells it, or maybe Bilbo tells it. I'm not sure. There's a better one. That's the better one. 30 white horses on a red hill. They chomp and they stomp and then they stand still.
What's the question?
What are they?
They're 30 what white horses.
It's the same as a little white fence that's always wet but never rained on yet.
Teeth.
Yeah.
Hey. Okay. I've never heard someone refer to their teeth as stomping, but okay.
I don't know. The original wording is they champ and they stamp.
Even weirder.
Even weirder. Okay, one more from my book.
Okay.
This is a dumb joke. What happened when the fencing team tried to wrap up the tournament? This is actually a pretty good dumb joke.
When the fencing team tried to wrap up the tournament?
What happened when the fencing team tried to wrap up the tournament?
They got foiled.
Yay! Hey! Alright, that's good. You play us some flute now.
I'm just trying to, for future reference, when one of us is, like, thinking and can't speak.
Oh, the Jeopardy?
Yeah.
We're going to have to cut that out of the podcast, but it's so good. Just keep doing it. Okay. What did Eve do when she wanted sugar?
She ate the apple. I don't know.
She raised Cain.
Oh.
Boo. Okay, tell your grandfather's story.
Yes, we have a special story.
Oh, but first we're going to do the weather.
We are, okay.
First we're going to do the weather.
It's already 12:30. It's
already 12:30.
You all are dying to know what's going on outside. So am I. I haven't been outside in 2 weeks.
My goodness. No. It is currently 80 degrees in Pease Air Force Base here in Portsmouth. 80 degrees. There's a thunderstorm in the vicinity. It's been gray all day and rainy. And I think there's going to be probably some more rain today. Good for our plants. 60% chance of rain. Showers likely this afternoon. 30% chance of thunderstorms later this evening. Mostly cloudy. Low of 68. Tomorrow, hot one. 88. Probably going to rain again. The next day, probably going to rain again. 77. It's going to be kind of a rainy week. But you know what? I don't mind. My plants will like it, and there'll be less crows eating. My God. I have the next six tomatoes. It's like, okay, we're early on a roll. They're getting red. Oh, I'm going to pick them tomorrow. And then I went to camp, and I came back, and they had all been eaten by crows.
No.
Probably. I think they're crows. My wife thinks it's a rat, which we know that we do have a rat in the shed.
Yeah.
Or it could be squirrels, too. But
last night, something in my bed was biting my legs, like some kind of bug. And I don't know what kind of bug it is, because I checked my bed, and it's not like bed bugs or fleas or anything.
That's
so
good.
I am so mad, because now I have to wash all my stuff, and I don't even know what I'm trying to find.
Huh, so you woke up with bites?
Well, I laid down in my bed, and then about 15 minutes later, I had to get up and go sleep on the couch because I had bites all down my leg.
Continuously biting. Oh, my goodness. But and how are the bites now?
I mean, they're fine. They're just like, you know, mosquito-type bug bites, you know? So it's not the end of the world, but I am not happy.
Huh. I wonder what it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ugh, I've had really bad bed bugs in my life. It was really bad.
Luckily, I've never been a victim to bed bugs specifically, but like now there's something in my bed that is presumably a bug.
It is a bedish bug.
Yeah.
A bug in a bed.
Yeah.
It's probably about as snug as a bug in a rug right now.
I know. I'm going to kill it.
Oh, good. Good. Okay. Go ahead and tell your story. You could tell a little background if you want.
Yeah. So, this story is by Frank the Sow. He does happen to meet my grandfather, so I don't know if that's like reverse nepotism. I don't know. It's a great story.
It is just straight up nepotism.
Okay, I didn't know like if it was only one way.
I don't think so.
Anyway,
that's a good question.
It's not actually nepotism because it is just a really good story.
Yeah.
But so you know what he does is like every few years he writes like a bunch of poems and short stories and stuff, and then he puts them in these self-published books, and this is the most recent one called Poetically Speaking, and this is towards the end of the book a little short story called The Owl Said.
Do you want me to provide any background music?
Yeah, no, some guitar, like chill guitar music would be fun.
Is it dark or bright?
More along the dark side. I was thinking just like calm, like, you know, stuff you would hear, like if, you know, in a forest or something. Yeah, there you go. Okay. Here we go. The Owl Said. It was first noticed by the earth and rocks and rivers. More felt than heard it was. The snow and ice of the season, though deep and cold, couldn't muffle it, for it was everywhere. Even the air was moved by its presence. But whatever it wasn't clear. There was something there for sure, but none of them could quite make it out. After much listening and wondering, finally a river gurgled out what it may have heard. The question. Peace? Astounded by this possibility, there went out from all the earth and all the waters of the earth an inquiry. Sent it was throughout all creation to see if others had heard it more clearly and had an answer to the great question. Peace? The inquiry quickly made its way to the kingdom of the ants, and upon first hearing it, the worker ants dutifully hurried to the queen, repeating the now universal question, "Peace?" The queen was overjoyed at the prospect, but after gathering her counsel and much careful listening, they could not confirm or deny the possibility. It being the darkest time of the year, and the ground above being frozen solid, the queen rushed messengers to the tunnels of the Kingdom of the Mice, as they were the ones with easy access to the surface world in winter, to see what they had heard. Upon arrival of the ant messengers, all of Mycedom became a tither. Could it be true? In a great throng they gathered with hope at the king's throne, and the crowd whispered the question to him in one small voice. "Peace?" The king, in his excitement, slid off his throne, shouting, "I must know!" Calling all the wisest mice of the land to the council in the king's court, he and they huddled together, listening intently, but none could clearly decipher the message. With a need for an answer pressing upon him, the king immediately sent out great numbers of couriers to all animal kind and to all plant kind and all insect kind, to all the kinds of the face of the earth and in the waters of the earth, to find the answer to the question, "Peace?" The search was long and far and deep throughout all the world, but in the end, they all returned without an answer. The question was universally heard, they told the king, but none had an answer. The animals did not. The plants did not. The insects did not. The fishes did not. And the very foundations of Earth itself could not decipher it. Humankind, they reported, also had no answer and seemed to have little interest in pursuing this vague hearing. All they said had only the great question, "Peace." With concern and hope in his eyes, the king said, "There is but one thing left to do. We must disturb the wise old owl that lives in the oldest and greatest oak in the forest. He, of all creation, must have the answer." At this, a gasp and a shudder went out from all. The ancient owl had not been disturbed for generation upon generation. So long had it been that none were sure if he was real or myth. The tree they knew of for pilgrimages were made to it by many, but the owl? His very being was surrounded by much myth and many, many legends of power and magic, of patience and great anger. It would be a fearful thing to awake the wisest of all from such a long slumber. But an answer had to be found, and so the king had trumpets blown all across the face of the earth and the waters of the seas, and a crier cried out to all, "Who will go to the owl and seek an audience and an answer to the universal question, peace?" The message, when received, drove fear deep into every living thing's heart and into the very foundations of creation. It appeared there might be none brave enough for the task within all that is the earth. The king sat in silence and waited with only hope. After a too lengthy time, a stir began at the edge of the crowd. Working its way toward the king, it became a whisper, and then a shout that a champion had been found to seek audience with the owl, and they, yes, they, not one but they, awaited the king up in the open, in the snow by the royal peach tree. The procession up to the entrance to the surface world was swiftly made. Upon arrival, the king and all those with him gazed with wonder at the two would-be deliverers. All had expected a lion or a bear or a bull or an eagle or others such as these to answer the call, but no. There before him was a small rabbit and a smaller, shivering mole. Quickly recovering from his surprise, the king inquired, "Are you prepared to go and disturb the great old owl in the oldest oak tree in the forest, seeking an audience with him and have him come here, that we might have the answer to the universal question that all creation has heard? Peace?" They answered, "By our lives we will do this." With nothing more said to the king, with doubt in his heart, waved for them to go, and then sat himself down with little hope in the snow to await their return. The rabbit and the mole, with much hardship and danger in the winter ice and cold, facing hungry predators and crossing half-frozen streams and suffering from much, much more than just these, made their way with all the haste they could muster to the oldest oak tree deep in the forest. There, with their loudest voices, which weren't very loud indeed, they called out to the owl to ask an audience, and then stood shivering from cold and fear in silence. Soon, with a flutter, he appeared high in the tree and looked down on them with his piercing eyes. Spreading his wings and dropping off the limb, the owl swooped down toward the rabbit and the mole. There, at the base of the tree, in the snow and cold, the rabbit and mole collapsed in terror, hugging each other, trembling, not knowing if there would be an audience with the owl or if they would be the owl's supper. But, fear or not, they stayed together. With a passing swoosh close over their heads, the owl landed himself on a branch above them and gazed down at the trembling two with his all-seeing eyes focused on them. The rabbit and mole were speechless with fright. After a fearfully long moment, the owl spoke to them, saying, "I've been expecting you, for I know that all creation is waiting in this cold winter season for an answer to the question which the river correctly heard that has gone out to all creation. Peace?" With the owl's words echoing away in the distance on the frigid air, there was a pause so hard it could bend steel before the owl continued, "I do not have the answer." With this, the rabbit and the mole wilted, fearing their mission was a failure, and turned to go. "Wait," commanded the owl. "I have no answer now, but I know the place to go and seek it. Tell the king I will make the journey and meet him at the royal peach tree with whatever answer I have." Now the rabbit and the mole were overjoyed, and bowing with respect, they turned and hurried back to the king with the news. They were greeted with great joy and hope by a standing king and all the earthly kingdoms represented there. And after cheers and celebration, and with the rabbit and mole close by the king's side, everyone settled themselves in the snow to await the arrival of the great old owl with a great hope in their hearts. They waited patiently day and night in the icy snow to hear what the owl would say. Finally, there came a gray day's late afternoon when the owl was sighted. At first, he was only a speck in the sky, noticed by few. Could it be him, they asked? As he grew closer, more and more recognized that the long-awaited hour had come, and a joyful cry went up. Soon enough, the owl swooped in, landing on a branch low in the royal peach tree above the king. Settling himself there, he looked thoughtfully out at the crowd that had waited so patiently in the cold for an answer to the great question. "Peace?" And so the great owl spoke. "I too heard it and was troubled by the sound that has gone out through all of the earth," he said. "Disturbed I was by this great question. We all have felt this question. Peace? Immediately I knew the answer would lay at one place and at one time only, and so I waited. I waited for your courageous emissaries to come and alert me that all creation was now ready to hear whatever answer I would find. After meeting with the brave rabbit and the heroic mole, I flew directly to the one place that would hold the answer to this universal question. The human place called church. I went quietly, discreetly, wishing not to intrude on them, and there I listened intently from an out-of-the-way perch to all they said, all they read, and all they sang, and have brought you the answer I received there, back here to you. With great expectation, the multitude hung on his every word. With snowflakes now drifting down in the air, and the gray sky darkening toward a winter night, with all that said, and he looking down on the throng gathered there below him, the owl shifted his feet, while lightly shaking snow from his wings, and uttered a solitary word for all to hear. War. And that is The Owl Said. Whoa. By Frank Fasal.
Whoa. It was kind of a more poetic, darker version of The Search for Delicious.
I'll take your word for it. I haven't read that.
Once upon a time, there was a king.
Mm-hmm.
And the king wanted to know, what is the most delicious thing in the entire world? He called upon all of his experts.
Mm-hmm.
He called upon all of his courtiers.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone had a claim. They said, oh, meatballs. Oh, bread. So he found the bravest traveler he could, and he brought him to the court steps.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, go forth and find the most delicious thing in the entire world. So the traveler went forth to the greatest kitchen that had ever been created, and he ate the most sumptuous meal. He said, surely, this is it. Then he continued his travels, and he went to a watermelon farm, and he found the most ripest watermelon and sank his teeth into it and said, oh my God, this must be it. But his journey continued, and he went to the greatest sushi bar that was ever created.
Uh-huh.
And he said, oh my gosh, this unagi is incredible. This must be it. This must be it. And he brought all these things back to the king, and the king said, nope, that's not it. And so he journeyed again for years and years, bringing things back, until once he came back, and there was a drought over the land, and no one had a drop of water for ages. And he said, I'm going to go out and find something. And he went to the cool spring that was behind the mountain that no one knew about or something. And then he brought some water back to the king, and the king drank it, and he said, oh, you've found it. That is the definition of delicious. Cool water. Something like that. It's like a long children's book. It was read to me in like fourth grade.
Mm.
Anywho, that was nice.
Yeah.
Okay, now I have the song we can sing.
Okay.
Let's see. What should we play? Something campfire-y. How about You Are My Sunshine?
Sounds fun.
You are my sunshine, my only sun. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. The other night, dear, as I lay sleeping, I dreamed I held you in my arms. When I awoke, dear, I was mistaken. So
all my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. The other day, I thought you called me, and so I dialed your number fast. When you answered, it was just a butt dial. That's when I knew this would never last. But you are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine.
Let's see. This is so dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Why is the word invisibility such a strange one for its purpose?
Because you can see it.
It has five eyes.
Oh, okay.
Let's see.
Okay, he got one.
This is really bad.
Okay.
What does one and one make in Ireland?
Two?
An Irish stew. An Irish stew, I guess, is a thing.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I simply do not understand.
Me neither. Well, I mean, I don't know what's in an Irish stew. I'm guessing some mutton and potatoes and stuff.
Yeah.
God, this is so bad. Why is a horseback rider like a cloud?
They're on top of something?
Because they both hold the reins.
Okay.
Wah, wah! here's one for all you capitalists out there. Why is a rifle like a lazy worker?
because they get fired.
Yay!
Oh, that's right, children, get back in the mines.
Oh, God. Let's see here. I don't under... Oh, my God, this is so bad. This is so bad.
Okay.
It's really dumb.
Okay.
You're never going to get it. It's too dumb.
Okay.
How does a sculptor die? So dumb.
I don't know.
He makes faces and busts.
Huh?
I don't. It's really stupid.
Did bro die of dysentery?
Why are seasick passengers like a strong opposition in Congress? Why are seasick passengers like a strong opposition in Congress? Because they are opposed to every motion.
Okay.
Real dumb. Real dumb. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is real dumb too.
Mm-hmm.
Why are scales like roadmaps?
Like the ones you weigh things on, or like fish scales?
Because they show you the way. Yes, like...
Okay.
I couldn't answer the question without giving it away. A man with his trousers rolled to the knee, his saw over his head. What am I?
Take
a wild guess.
I could not tell you. That one Greek guy who had a sword swinging over his head all the time.
Oh, Damocles.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. It's Lumberjack Damocles.
Yeah.
A rooster. It's so stupid. It's so stupid. The rooster is the answer.
Okay.
Okay, this is a really, really dumb one.
Okay.
Where does satisfaction come from?
Your brain.
Here's a better question. Where is satisfaction made?
The satisfactory.
Yeah!
Okay.
Okay, well, this is the last one.
Okay.
It's going to be really dumb.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No. Oh, this is good.
Okay.
How did it happen that the two cheerleaders ended up at the altar? Or got married, you could just say.
I don't know. They're each other's biggest cheerleaders.
That's a good thought. They met by chance.
They met by...
By chance.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Real bad. This is really the last one.
Okay.
What is found in the center of America and Australia? This is a true riddle.
Letters?
You got it. But you had to figure out what letter it is. The letter R is the answer.
Okay. Well, is that the exact center as in, like, how many
the
words
center
are
of
in
the
both?
Word. There's four letters, or there's five letters on each side of those things.
Okay.
Four letters on each side.
Okay.
Or actually, yeah, there's four in Australia and three in America.
Okay.
So that's all fair.
Yeah.
It's a fair one. What kind... Okay, this is really the last, final
mm-hmm.
one.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of room has no ceiling? This is a... I'd say a true... Sort of a true riddle.
A live studio audience set? I don't know.
A mushroom! Okay. Alright, so this is a ghost story book.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, so I'm going to tell a story, and I'm going to let you pick a story out of there, and then you can tell a story, okay?
Okay.
So I'm going to first tell a story.
Okay.
In the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of God, God created the earth, mm-hmm. okay? And he created all those things that you read about, the animals and the sky and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But little do people know, on the very last day, after he had created the humans,
mm-hmm.
he was nervous about this.
Okay.
He said, these things, I might screw everything up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really not sure about this.
Mm-hmm.
So what he did, he created a self-destruct switch, a lever
mm-hmm.
that could be pulled that would destroy the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And he created what eventually went down in history as the serpent, but he created a snake,
mm-hmm.
okay? And the snake's task, actually, was not to corrupt Adam and Eve, but it was to guard this lever,
mm-hmm.
okay? So that, you know, they wouldn't accidentally
mm-hmm.
pull it. And he named the snake Nate.
Okay.
And he gave Nate the gift of speech.
Mm-hmm.
So that he could warn people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, you know, centuries go by, millennia go by. There's not too many people around most of the time for Nate to even talk to.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, time rolls on.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually we get to, you know, kind of the early half of the 20th century. And Nate is out there, which is, the Garden of Eden is now... you know, morphed into a desert.
Okay.
So he's out there in the middle of the desert and he's guarding. He's under his nice little rock, you know, because he's getting shade. Sometimes he suns himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he's guarding the lever. You know, it's Nate and the lever and all this expansive desert. And this explorer comes by. Okay? This kind of pith helmet type character comes by.
Okay.
He's like, oh, what is this? What is this lever? I don't know what it is. And Nate comes out from his room and says, yo, do not pull that lever. It will destroy the earth.
Yeah.
Please do not do that. The guy says, by Jove, it's a talking snake.
Uh-huh.
I've never seen such a thing in my entire life. Why, this is brilliant. And he says, you, sir, what is your name? It's Nate. You must come with me now, and I must show you to the world. And Nate sort of thinks about it for a second. Well, I do have this lever to guard, but... Oh, it won't take a moment. Come, please, come with me. And so Nate convinces Nate to come with him and drives out to early century Hollywood and introduces Nate to the world.
Okay.
Nate is an instant smash success.
Okay.
Everybody wants to be on the radio with Nate. Everybody wants, and then they don't believe him. So he has to wait for about 30 years or so until television invented. He goes on to television. He gets interviewed by Jack Parr. You know, everybody loves Nate. Okay. It's like, Nate, he's got his... he's got his endorsement deals that he has.
Mm-hmm.
He sells soap. He sells scales that weigh people. But he's like, not the scales like on a snake.
Mm-hmm.
The scales weigh yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm skinny because I'm Nate and it's just a little snake. Da-da-da-da-da. Everyone should feel uncomfortable about themselves. That kind of thing. And you know, he's making money hand over fist. Or even though he doesn't have hands or let alone any kind of a fist device. Okay?
Yeah.
After a while, people get over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like, yeah, Nate's a talking snake. Yeah, I know. I've seen commercials,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, you know, Nate didn't really invest his money very well. He went kind of burned through it. And he's sort of down on the outs. You know, it's about 1960 or so, and he's in a in a motel style condo down there in LA. They call them bungalows, but really they're just tiny, kind of sad apartments, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, the landlord's knocking on his door. He doesn't have the rent. He's getting real depressed. Mm-hmm. He starts drinking. He goes to Betty Ford. He meets a young lady who also has similar problems. They get together. Eventually, they get married, and they have kids, which are half snakes, which nobody thinks is weird. It's all good. One day, he's sort of sitting by their above-ground pool. You know, no big deal. And he sees that the very first highway is about to be built through the Mojave Desert. Mm. Oh, that's interesting. Wait a minute! I had this lever to guard the entire time. Yeah. They gets off his bathrobe. He scurries out to the car. Uh-huh. He starts it up. He rolls over out there to the Mojave. He's driving. He's got his little tail on the gas pedal all the way. He's almost there to the lever. He sees off in the distance that this highway has been built all around the lever. The lever's just somehow sticking up out of the center of the highway. And the very first car that's ever driven down the highway is approaching the lever. And it's going faster and faster. And Nate sees it off in the distance. He's trying to get there. He flips his car over a rock that he used to sun himself on. His car is flipped, but that's okay because he's a snake. And he gets out of the car and he's scurrying over. He's scurrying over to the lever, but there's that car off in the distance. It's going at 60 miles an hour, which is unheard of for the time period. And it is just rolling along, almost there. And it's getting closer and closer. Nate is scurrying over to the lever. The car's getting closer. Nate's getting closer. Nate throws himself in front of the lever just as the car slams on its brakes and runs Nate over in a squish, but just in time to save the lever that will end the world.
Okay.
The driver, very distraught, okay? The driver had just come from an upsetting divorce hearing. And was going to lose his entire, estate. So he's sad. But he gets out and he sees Nate down there and he sees the lever. And he looks back and forth between the two. And he says, well, better Nate than lever.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
keeping up with the religious theme, there's a story in here called The Modern Noah.
Okay.
And I have no idea what it's about.
Noah idea!
We'll see.
All right, let's hear it.
Okay. So this is The Modern Jonah. I said modern Noah. I'm sorry. My brain is all messed up. I didn't get much sleep last night because of the whole bug thing.
I hear you.
This is The Modern Jonah.
Both seafarers, though.
Yes. Did a whale swallow Jonah? Scientists declare that although the whale is the largest animal that ever lived, its throat is so small that it will choke on a herring. However, it is also conjectured that the cachalot, or sperm whale, may have been the great fish mentioned in the Bible. When mortally wounded, the sperm whale has been known to disgorge chunks of cuttlefish 6 feet long by 4 feet wide, and an 18-foot skeleton of a shark was found in the stomach of one on another occasion. Then, too, read the following account of James Bartley, the English sailor, who was actually swallowed by a whale and later rescued. This is a verbatim translation of the report of the French scientist Monsieur de Parville in the Journal des Debats, 1914. In February 1891, the whaling ship Star of the East was in the vicinity of the Falkland Islands when the lookout sighted a large sperm whale 3 miles away. Two boats were launched, and in a short time, one of the harpooners was able to spear the whale. The second boat attacked the whale, but was upset by a lash of its tail, and the men were thrown into the sea, one man being drowned and another, James Bartley, could not be found. The whale was killed in a few hours, its great body then being brought to the ship's side. The crew busied itself with axes and spades, removing the blubber. They worked all day and part of the night. The next morning, they attached some tackle to the stomach of the whale and hoisted it on deck. Suddenly, the sailors were startled by something in it, which gave spasmodic signs of life. Inside was found the missing sailor, doubled up and unconscious. He was placed on deck and treated to a bath of seawater, which revived him, but his mind was not clear, and he was placed in the captain's quarters, where he remained for 2 weeks, a raving lunatic. He was kindly and carefully treated by the captain and the ship's officers and gradually regained possession of his senses. At the end of the third week, he entirely recovered from the shock and resumed his duties. During the sojourn in the whale's stomach, Bartley's skin, where it was exposed to the action of the gastric juices, underwent a striking change. His face, neck, and hands were bleached white, taking on the appearance of parchment. Bartley remembered the lash of the whale's tail, and then was encompassed by great darkness, and he felt that he was slipping along a smooth passage that seemed to move and carry him forward. His hands came in contact with a yielding, slimy substance which seemed to shrink from his touch. He could breathe easily, but the heat was terrible. It seemed to open the pores of his skin and draw out his vitality. The next he remembered, he was in the captain's cabin. While he recovered fully from his mental depression, his skin retained its ghastly pallor and never recovered its natural appearance.
Whoa. Hello. Okay, so I guess I should say that that is from a Ripley's Believe It or Not book.
Yeah.
So I guess you can believe that or not.
Whoa.
Wow.
Personally, I would like to see the news article they're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm a little skeptical.
Yeah. I think, like, their whole thing is that it's not. Or there are some things that are real, aren't there? I don't know.
I
think that was just, like, an era where it was just, like...
Yeah, as a kid, I just read the little books of, like, world records and stuff to see all the funny pictures.
Right.
You know, but someone with, like, really long nails and stuff.
But also, it's like a... basically like a freak show, right? Museum.
Basically, museum. Yeah. Yeah, it gives off the book... that story at least gives off a lot of, like, creepypasta energy, where, like... Did you hear about the whole, like, creepypasta era on the internet?
No.
It's just this thing where, like, a bunch of, like, 12-year-olds would write what they considered to be a scary story and then, like, share them with each other, and they were all called creepypasta stories, and there were some characters that became pretty infamous, like Slender Man started as a creepypasta.
Huh.
And so, like...
which then basically became a video game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, but reading the stories is funny because it's obviously written by, like, some 12-year-old, and you know, so it's like, it's not scary to anyone but that kid.
Right. Slender Man, though, I've just played once or twice on my phone, and I was afraid.
Yeah, no, I think, like, once it got more adopted into mainstream and actual adults started making games about it and stuff like that. And Slender Man, I guess, in and of itself is a kind of scary concept. Just a tall dude with no face, like...
Yeah, I'm afraid now. I'm afraid right now.
Yeah. There was this one website that I think was, like, you know, written and moderated by adults and stuff because the stories were, like, actually normal. But it was, like, just... a website full of scary stories, and a bunch of my friends were really obsessed with it, and this was like sixth grade or something, and so, you know, I went on the website and read a couple of the stories, and I just, like, could not sleep that night.
Aww.
I was scared very easily as a kid.
I'm still scared easily. Just put a shaky camera out. I'm piling under a blanket.
Yeah, I think it depends for me. I don't watch a lot of horror movies and stuff. I feel like the last time I saw a horror movie was when that new Insidious, like, Red Door movie came out. And I watched it with a friend. And in the moment, I was, like, pretty scared where, you know, my heart was racing. Like, what's going to happen, you know? And then afterwards, I just kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
I think some movies, if I watched them, would probably give me nightmares. But back then, I was scared so easy. Like, have you seen Paranorman?
No.
I think that came out when I was in, like, third or fourth grade. And it's literally just like, a claymation animated movie about zombies.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like, could not sleep for the longest time.
Coraline is very creepy, too.
Coraline, yeah. I didn't see that one until, like, a year or two ago. It's a very good movie, but if I had watched it as a kid, I would not have been okay.
Yeah. Yep, I remember when I was probably embarrassingly old. I was probably, like, 12. I bet I was 12. And we went to Funtown Splashtown with camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into the haunted house thing, which was a very short, you know, hallway.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one of those guys. If there's a guy in a cage.
Yeah.
And he yells at you and rattles the cage. And I did not forget that for a long, 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 long time. I was very scared.
One time a while, like, a few years ago, not a few years ago, this was like 5 or 6 years ago at this point, some family members visited, and they were there in October, so we all went on this haunted walk thing, and it was actually really good, like, you know, really good production quality, and, you know, it was all scary, but I think the scariest part for me was I was like 13 maybe, and someone my age like popped out and was just supposed to be like a haunted kid or whatever, and it was just really startling to see someone my age just like creepy and like staring at me, and I was like, huh?
There's a really good one here in New Hampshire. What is it? I forget what it's called, but it's been every year for years. And they do, apparently it's made up of, like, Broadway heads, like, old people that have been doing theater, and it's really amazing, and I want to go to it, but I'm also afraid to.
Yeah.
I forget what it's called. We'll promote it for them.
Yeah, when we can figure it out.
When we can figure it out, and when it's relevant at all, considering it's summertime.
Yeah, no, I think Spirit Halloween is going to be opening up sometime soon, because online it just said opening in August, and the other day, I was in Newington, and so I didn't see, like, there were signs, you know, kind of near where it's supposed to be set up this year, and, but they didn't say when it's opening, so I don't know the exact day, but I will be very excited when it opens, and I can go look at all the stuff.
Sick.
Yeah.
In Newington it is?
Yeah.
Okay. Which is right next door to Durham, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Cool, man. You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey. You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey. You get a line and I'll get a pole, and we'll all go. Oh, we'll all go fishing in the crawdad hole, honey. Ooh. How about this? You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey. You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey. Honey. You get a line and I'll get a pole, and we'll all go fishing in the crawdad hole, honey. Honey. Oh. Sitting in the studio with my friends in jail, honey.
Woo.
Sitting in the studio with my friends in jail, honey. Looking outside, it's awful dark. Think I see a lightning spark. Oh, honey, honey. You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey.
You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey.
You get a line and I'll
pole and we'll all go fishing in the crawdad hole. Yep, still sitting here in the studio with Zin J. Still here in the studio with Zin J. Right here in the studio, it ain't no crawdad hole, I know, honey. You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey. You get a line and I'll get a pole, baby. You get a line and I'll get a pole, and we'll all go fishing in the crawdad hole.
Sitting in the studio with Whiskey Joe. When he'll stop raining, I don't know. But the sky is actually very dark, and I'm starting to get a little scared. So, in the studio with Whiskey Joe.
Yeah! You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey. Honey!
You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey. Get a line and I'll get a pole. We'll all go fishing by crawdad hole.
Walking through that haunted house, honey. Ooh. Walking through that haunted house, babe. And it's scary in his cage, and I'll never forget that to my dying day, honey. Sugar mine.
You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey. You get a line and I'll get a pole, babe. You get a line and I'll get a pole. Well, I'll go fishing by the crawdad hole. You get a line.
You get a line. We do one more.
Okay. Sitting in the studio with Whiskey Joe.
Oh.
It's so dang hot, I really wish it would fall.
Oh, what?
Cause then school would start again and I would get to see my friends.
Oh.
In the studio with Whiskey Joe.
You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey. You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey. You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey. You get a line and I'll get a pole.
We'll all go fishing down
crawdad hole. You get a line and I'll get a pole.
Yay! You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey.
And I'll get a pole, babe.
You get a line and I'll get a pole. We'll all go fishing in the crawdad hole.
You get a line and I'll get a pole, honey. It feels like there should be one more line at the end
there. It's just honey, honey, honey.
Oh, really?
You get a line and I'll get a pole.
My brain likes to move in cycles, and the cycle has been interrupted.
Or like honey shook a pie or whatever.
Yeah. There, it feels like there should be one more repetition of it, but no.
No, you're wrong. No, but you're the best.
I shouldn't you're be the wrong best. In this situation.
No, and you're
right
never
by virtue of the fact that it's stupid that I'm wrong.
You're right by virtue of being Zin Jade.
Nice.
Okay.
That kind of reminds me of this thing I heard, where apparently in like New Orleans, taxis don't pick people up past a certain time of night, not because of crime or anything, but because I guess what happens is a ghost will like wave down the taxi, and then halfway through the ride they will forget that they're in a taxi because they're ghosts, and then they just kind of disappear and the cab driver gets stiffed for their fare.
What?
I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. It's just something I heard in New Orleans, apparently.
Oh,
it's a thing okay. that allegedly happens.
It is a famously haunted place.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, so that's a... I dare say that's a superstition among cab drivers, but
yeah.
Superstitions, you know, something happened.
Yeah, no.
You don't walk onto a letter ladder, you know. Why? Because you'll probably get some paint dropped on your head. You know? Don't break any mirrors.
Oh, no.
Okay. We only have 20 more minutes.
Oh, my.
I'm going to read you a few more riddles.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Okay, here's one you could probably get. A dumb joke, but you probably get it. Which birds are religious?
All of them.
Birds of prey.
Oh, okay.
Let's see here.
Harley Quinn, specifically.
Okay, I haven't even really read the sentence here.
Okay.
Under what circumstances are a newspaper reporter and a builder equally likely to fail? Oh my God, this is so stupid. Under what circumstances are a newspaper reporter and a builder equally likely to fail? This is so dumb.
During a violent protest.
When they put up stories without foundations.
Oh, okay. I see.
Okay. I think you might get this.
Okay.
This is a true riddle.
Okay.
What is it we all require, we all give, we occasionally ask for, but very seldom take?
Time or something?
Give, occasionally ask. Yeah, that's pretty good. Take, sell, or something. That's pretty good. But no. That's pretty good. What is it we all require, we all give, we occasionally ask for, but very seldom take?
Responsibility.
Ooh! Advice is the answer.
Okay.
So you're on the right track.
Okay.
Me
calling out a bunch of people. No.
Here's one. I'll accept various answers on this.
Oh, boy.
What is it that we often return but never borrow?
Home? Like you go home?
What is it that we often return but never borrow? Not return to. What is it we often return but never borrow?
I
thought you were going to say one thing, but it's another thing.
Okay.
I thought you were going to say insults, but the answer is thanks.
Okay.
Let's see. Couple more. What? No, this is so stupid. No. If you're broke, why might it be a good idea to go out in the rain with your purse open?
So you don't have to pay the water bill.
Because there might be some change in the weather. What is a bird after he is 4 days old?
An adult bird?
5 days old.
Ugh. I don't like that one.
What bird is present at every meal? Oh, God.
The early bird?
The swallow, of course.
Okay.
Why do little... Oh, my God. Okay, why do little birds in their nests have to agree? So stupid.
I don't know.
Because otherwise they'd have a falling out.
Okay. That's actually close to what I was getting. I was going to say, if they argue too much, they're going to get thrown out and they can't fly.
They get thrown out.
Yeah.
Behave. Oh, my God. Okay. This is kind of a true little, but it's pretty dumb. What beverage represents the beginning of time?
Milk, like the Milky Way?
Hmm. No.
Coffee?
Close. What's at the beginning of time?
Tea.
Hey!
I'm so mad.
Why does a circus master wear a belt with three rings on it?
I don't know.
To keep his pants up.
Uh-huh.
That's more or less a bad joke.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Why is a pencil like a riddle?
I don't know. I'm
Is your brain dead yet?
A little.
It's no good without a point.
Okay.
Okay. That's enough of that. Goodness gracious. Okay, we only have 13 minutes left.
Hmm.
We're going to give you some community calendar announcements.
Yay.
We're going to sing or sort of, probably then sort of say goodbye. What else can we do? We've got, I've got plenty of stories.
Ooh.
Might have sold one more story. But let's see here. Friday, August 9th, okay? A little bit farther in the future. Portsmouth Historic Associates proudly announces the return of their annual Twilight Tour on Friday, August 9th from 4 to 8. This year's theme, Flames of Revolution, pays homage to the events that led to the signing of the Declaration of Independence, which the United States will celebrate its 250th anniversary in 2026.
Hmm.
The event will showcase several participating sites, each offering unique insights into the city's rich history. This is a self-guided walking tour. Visitors may plan their own route and are responsible for their own transportation. Okay? So just come and walk around.
Yeah.
I think you can do that anytime. Sites that may be visited on the tours include the Black Heritage Trail of New Hampshire, the Gundalow Company, the Governor John Langdon House, the Moffat Ladd House and Garden, and the John Paul Jones House, Strawberry Bank Museum, and more. For information about the tours, including more sites and a link to purchase tickets, may be found at portsmouthhistoric.org. Cool, man.
Nice.
Cool man. Second Sunday of every month. Is that next Sunday? This is the first Sunday, right?
So yeah, I think so.
Next Sunday, guys, get your songs ready. Get your poems ready. It's open mic right here at the Button Factory stage at 909 Islington.
Whoa.
You know, doors open at 6:30. It starts at 7.
Whoa.
You could pay $10. This is just a suggestion, okay? All ages. For some reason, our flyer here says, as it always has, bring your own chair as a feature. Also, we have chairs. I guess it's a joke.
Hmm.
There's a rotating crew of open mic hosts for a safe and chill spot, guys.
Nice.
Safe and chill. Okay, here we go. Here's one more story.
Okay.
Here's one more story.
I'm going to go to
the ladies' room. Once upon a time, okay, there was a kingdom. Another kingdom story. And the king of the kingdom, in his very archaic fashion, is trying to marry off his daughter, like happens in all these stories. And the daughter doesn't like any of the suitors. Just like the rest of these stories do. One suitor after another comes and tries to impress her with their prowess of this or that, but she yawns and sets her tiger on them type of thing. Now, finally, it's been decided by the king that this is it. Okay, I'm sorry, but this is it. I'm going to set up a contest. Okay, I'm going to set up a big, big contest. And whoever wins the contest is going to marry you. Okay, that's it. I've given you so many options. Now, despite this not being an acceptable situation for the princess, she really had no choice, so she said, all right. I will accept whoever wins this contest. I mean, after all, it's really just a marriage and doesn't really have anything to do back then with, you know, what you're doing, okay, behind closed doors, okay, if you know what I'm talking about. So she says, fine, okay? So the king summons the greatest warriors of the land to come and contest the hand of his daughter, the princess. Yes, he does, and they come from all over the land, and there is a contest in archery, and there is a contest in shot put, and there is a contest in hurdles, and there's a floor gymnastics plan. There's all sorts of routines that they must go through, the pommel horse. It's sort of like the Olympics, but more arcane and more people getting killed, like in the melee. You know, there's a big melee. You know, the three people left alive after the melee. He says, all right, you three are the cream of this crop. Now, I must send you all three out on a mission. And whoever accomplishes this mission shall have the hand of my daughter. And his daughter just sort of looked at the ground behind him because, you know, she didn't really want to marry any of these people. But that's just the way things worked back then.
Aww.
And so the warriors go out. And then they turn around and say, wait a minute, what is it you want us to do? And the king says, you must gather as many ping pong balls as possible throughout the land. And the three warriors kind of look at each other, shrug, and say, okay, and off they go. Ding, tick, 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 tick. Do-ga-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Time goes by. The people of the village think, oh my goodness. I mean, the kingdom, they say, these guys have been killed. They must have just fallen into puddles or something and drowned. But no! Yay! One day, as the sun is rising over the hill, they see the first warrior pulling a cart with the largest pile of ping pong balls anyone has ever seen. The king says, that's it. There can't be many more ping pong balls than this. You must have gathered almost all of them. So therefore, I grant you my daughter's hand in... Wait! Over the hill! As the sun is yet high in the sky, there is the second warrior. Here he comes over the hill carrying two carts, two huge carts, full overflowing with so many ping pong balls, more ping pong balls than anyone has ever seen, more ping pong balls than anyone has ever even dreamed of. The king says, that's it. There's no point in counting any more of these ping pong balls. This is the obvious winner because there can't be any more ping pong balls in the entire... Yet wait! Over the hill, as the sun, yay, is setting, the third warrior tops it, carrying two carts with two large lumps about the size of... like VW Beetles when their oxen straining and carrying them, and they sound kind of squishy and they seem sort of damp, and everyone kind of looks around each other, and the king says, sir, I'm a little confused. Those don't look like ping pong balls to me. And the warrior stamps his foot. Dang it. Ping pong balls? Ping pong balls? I thought you said King Kong's balls.
Oh my god.
Well, it's rainy as heck out there. Seems like this show will never end. And in every nook into which I look, I see another cycle. Resin company accepted, of course. But tonight, I'll be a lucky angel. Try to do you harm tonight. I'll keep away the psycho, or at least at the length of an arm, or well, it's dark as heck out there. It's a long walk home, and it seems like all the street lights all tonight. I'll be a lucky angel, and I don't want to try to do you harm tonight. Keep away the psycho, or at least that let them on. This has been the Weird People Show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Whiskey Joe, and right here is my dear friend. Her name is NJ. Zin-J, and I'm Whiskey Joe, it's just us two. What do you think, Zin-J?
I think I'm not going to enjoy my walk out to the car.
We're going to try to get you a trash bag to put over your head so you don't get too wet. But we don't want you to get too wet. And remember to love yourselves and love each other! I mean, love each other and love yourselves.